It's awesome to be here with you guys. If you're visiting with us here today, my name is Matt. I'm the lead pastor, teaching pastor here. And I'm excited to be able to talk with you guys today. Have you ever found joy in watching somebody else get into trouble? Maybe you're like, there's an honest person here. I'd say like, no, that would never be me. But, to be honest, I think that like that definitely comes out. Maybe it's like, a brother or sister, a sibling, a coworker, that it always seems like they get away with stuff that you don't. And when they do finally get into trouble, there's a little bit of rejoicing that happens inside of you. Yesterday, I was coaching my son, coaching his team in a basketball tournament. And so these teams are playing. We were in a game. It was in the morning. We were playing a team on the North Shore. And it was a tight game. And the refs were, like, calling it kind of tight. These are grade 7 students. I'm like, hey, like, give them a chance. Like, they're going to make some rule mistakes. Like, just kind of teach. No, they're calling it tight. And a couple times, they're tossing the ball. They're inbounding the ball. And they did it slightly wrong, maybe touching over the line or whatever they were doing wrong. And the ref was calling it out on them and giving the ball to the other team. I'm like, come on, you guys. Like, they at least teach the kids. So I'm the coach, and I'm getting kind of like, I'm a little bit angry at this. So we're at the end of the game, and it's tight, and I'm trying to get these guys, like, maybe we can, like, get over the hump and beat this team. And the other team is, like, inbounding the ball, and the kid, he steps over the line as he's inbounding the ball, and he throws it. And the ref is standing right there. And, like, I yelled. I won't yell because my mic is on. But I was like, hey, he stepped over the line. I'm like pointing it out. I like yelled like really loud, louder than I usually do as a coach, because I was like, hey, he broke the rules. You're calling it on my team. Now you better call it. And he noticed how like upset I was. Actually, he could have probably like gave me a technical or something, but he actually called it on the kid, and the kid got in trouble, and we got the ball back, which I was really happy about. And so there is like this joy in my heart over that. And so sometimes you enjoy watching, if we're honest, we enjoy doing that, seeing people in trouble. And, I'm just reminded, I'm going back into Mark today, and there's this story in the Bible that this guy, Mark, records about Jesus. People, religious people, in Jesus' day, they were just waiting for Jesus to do something wrong. They wanted to get him into trouble. They really didn't like him. I think that to a certain degree, the religious leaders of Jesus' day, they looked at him and they're like, why does this guy get away with breaking our rules? He shouldn't get away with breaking our rules. He should be getting in trouble. And so they're just waiting for him to cross that line so they could point it out and get him into trouble. Let's read it today. We're going to be looking at Mark chapter 3, verses 1 to 6. It says this: Jesus went into the synagogue again and noticed a man with a deformed hand. Since it was the Sabbath, Jesus' enemies watched him closely. If he healed the man's hand, they planned to accuse him of working on the Sabbath. Now, if you're wondering what the Sabbath is the last day of the week that the Jewish people of Jesus' day, they observed as a day that you do not work. It was their Saturday. So Sunday was the first day of the week. Saturday is the seventh. They wouldn't work. And it dates all the way back to the time of Moses. And it was a really, really important day for them. It was a day to rest. It was a day to worship God. It was a day for no work. And so they say, they're accusing him. He heals the man's hand. They plan to accuse him working on the Sabbath. Let's continue. Verse 3. It says, Jesus said to the man with the deformed hand, come and stand in front of everyone. Then he turned to his critics and asked, does the law permit good deeds on the Sabbath? Or is it a day for doing evil? Is this a day to save life or just destroy it?
but they wouldn't answer him.
He looked around at them angrily and was deeply saddened at their hard hearts. Then he said to the man, "Hold out your hand." So the man held out his hand and it was restored. At once the Pharisees went away and met with the supporters of Herod to plot how to kill Jesus. If you're reading this for the first time, you should be shocked. I mean, listen to this story. I mean, Jesus is in what would be their church. He's in church on a Sunday. For them, it's Saturday. And there's a man there. Probably from birth, his hand is deformed. Who knows? Maybe he has no use of that hand. It could be a birth defect. Maybe it was an accident at work. Who knows? But his hand is deformed. And Jesus, looking out in love and compassion, just wants to heal this man's hand. And all the religious leaders, the Pharisees, can see, they can't see the good that Jesus is doing. All they see is there's a rule that Jesus is breaking. All they see is the broken rule. As I said earlier, this keeping of the Sabbath, or this one day of the week where he did not work, dated all the way back to the time of Moses. Hundreds of years before Jesus, the people of Israel were in slavery. And God brought them out of slavery, brought them into the desert, and eventually into what would be known as Palestine. And God took a nation of slaves and decided to make a nation out of them. Gave them rules and regulations. This is what you guys, they had no rules and regulations. They said, this is how you guys need to live. And oh, by the way, I want you guys to keep the last day of the week as a day of rest, which would have been unheard of probably for them as slaves. They probably worked 7 days a week. 7 days a week they probably would have worked as slaves. And God comes along and says, no, I want you to set aside 1 day of the week for rest. This week was important, and it set them apart from all the other nations around them. When historians look at the nations that would have surrounded them at that time, there's no hint that any other nation around them would have had a Sabbath or a day of rest. They would have probably just had no rules in that regard. You work any day of the week, you wake all days of the week. And so this set them apart. It made them different. It's caused them to stick out from the other nations around them. By the time of Jesus, this Sabbath day had evolved into a badge of religious Jewishness. It wasn't just a day of the week to set aside for rest and to worship God. It set them aside. It was like, I'm a Jew and this is what I do. And it caused a fierce nationalism, exclusivity amongst them. The Sabbath had become a weapon for religious leaders. They'd taken this rule or this law of keeping aside 1 day of the week for rest, and they'd added all sorts of other rules onto it in terms of what work looked like and what work didn't. And so the religious leaders had turned this law that was meant to give the people rest during the work week, and they'd weaponized it. They used it to keep people in bondage instead of freeing them. The rule mattered more than the point of the rule. God had instituted this for the nation of Israel to give them rest. And now the point wasn't the rest. The point was the rule. Worship, as I've kind of was when I was going through that series on worship for them was completely vertical. Worship was something that I do to please God. Completely vertical. Whatever I need to do to please you, God, I'm going to do that. And it doesn't matter what kind of collateral damage it creates around me. As long as me and God are good, we are fine. It doesn't matter whether the thing that I do hurts my neighbor. As long as me and God are good, I'm fine. That is where we're at. Jesus comes along and he changes everything. Jesus put worship not just in regards to how I am vertically with God, but he changed the landscape and he says, you want to please God? It means that you love your neighbor. you want to please God, it actually means that you care about everybody else. It means that you love those around you, your neighbors, your relatives, those people that you don't even know, you love them. Worship became horizontal, not just vertical. How to love others. God never established the Sabbath for himself. He established it for them. And Jesus uses hyperbole in this. We can go back to the verse. If you look at verse 4, he uses almost exaggeration to get his point across. He says, does the law permit good deeds on the Sabbath? Or is it a day for doing evil? It's kind of a rhetorical question. Come on, dum-dums. He's saying to these guys. What's the Sabbath? What's the point of the Sabbath, you guys? Is it for doing good? Is it for doing evil? Is it to save life or to destroy it? You guys are twisting what God wants to do. The question that I wanted to ask you today that I think comes out of this story is this. Is it possible for us to get so caught up with the rules? What I mean by rules is what is right and what is wrong. Is it easy for us to get so caught up with the rules that we miss out on God's ultimate goal of restorative love? You know, we look at this story and we take a step back. We don't live within that culture. You know, the Sabbath doesn't have the same meaning to us in the 21st century. And so it's easy for us to separate ourselves from that. But I think that there's still things that we can be taking away from this story. We can get so caught up in the right and the wrong and what we consider God saying, this is what you do and this is what you don't do, that we miss out on God's ultimate purpose of restorative love. These religious leaders were so caught up in making sure that Jesus didn't step across the line that they couldn't see that the whole point was that God wanted to bring life and wholeness into the situation. I think for some of us, it's harder for some of us than it is for others. If you are a black and white kind of person, you see things as this is the line and you don't step over it. Now, you're a person your entire life, you've stayed within the line of the rules and you just want to know how to do things the right way. You want things to be plain and you want to see things to be clear and you don't want to step over that line. And I think that if you are kind of a black and white person, I think that Jesus wants to challenge us in this. The old set of rules that were established by Moses ended up being turned into something that was never meant to be. Jesus came to fulfill the law. Jesus came to refocus our eyes to show us what the purpose of the law was, but he did something more than that. He came to fulfill the old set of rules and to give us something completely brand new. The scriptures show us that the old law that Moses gave was supposed to fade away. And Jesus came to give us something completely brand new, a brand new covenant. It wasn't just new. It wasn't just easier. In fact, it was harder in many ways. It doesn't allow us just to follow a set of rules, but it comes and asks us this one question. What is the way of love? What is the way of love? The people, the religious people of Jesus' day, all they knew was a set of rules, a set of do's and don'ts. And Jesus came along and he says, I want to give you a new command. What is the way of love? I'm going to give you a new command. I want you to love each other as I have loved you. I think as Christians in the 21st century, we have to ask ourselves, what is the way of love? In 2 Corinthians chapter 3, verse 6, it says this. He has enabled us to be ministers of this new covenant. This is a covenant not of written laws, but of the Spirit. The old written covenant ends in death, but under the new covenant, the Spirit gives life. If you are a rules person, you just want to follow the rules. Paul, writing to the church in Corinth, says this. Listen, those written rules, they bring death. But the Spirit came to bring life. And sometimes as New Testament Christians, we can actually take the Bible that Jesus gave us. And in the same way that those Pharisees weaponized the Sabbath, we can actually take this and weaponize it. We can do the exact same thing. We take the things that God wrote down and we weaponize it and we turn it into a set of rules, a set of do's and don'ts. Paul says, man, that old way is gone. That old way is gone. God, Jesus has given us a brand new covenant. That old set of rules, if you just want to stay between the rules, that brings death. But the new way is the Spirit comes inside of you and brings you life and leads and guides you in the way of love. It looks so different than the old way. Jesus didn't heal this man because of something he did right. Jesus healed this man because he loved him. Because it was the way of love. Jesus didn't heal this man, I'm sure, because he had everything correct in his life, because he was following all the rules and regulations, and God looked down and said, oh man, you're so good. You've been such a good guy. I'm going to heal you because of that. You can see the context of this story, and Jesus just comes in and says, man, this is a child of God. This is a child of God, and the way of love that I'm going to show is to heal this man, and it has nothing to do with whether he deserves it or not. You know, Jesus takes away our ability to judge by human standards. He takes away our ability to say this person deserves it and this person doesn't. We can't just figure out the rules and then follow them to be okay. Jesus calls us to listen to what the Spirit is saying to us, what the way of love would ask us to do. When we hear a story like this, typically we don't relate ourselves to the Pharisees. They seem unrelatable to us. They are the bad guys in the story. But I think sometimes we have more in common with them than we realize at times. Have you ever met somebody or come across somebody that you just kind of don't like them just because of the way they act, the things they do, their personality? You judge them based upon what you can see with your physical eyes more than really knowing them deep down. I think all of us have done that at some point, and maybe we're offended at the things that they do from their outward appearance. Last week was the Super Bowl. You guys watch the Super Bowl at all? You have the halftime show and the bands come out. And last week it was like, you know, I just kind of like preached on that whole worship thing and about worshiping God clamorously. I talked about how David, you know, ripped off his shirt as he worshiping God, right? And so there I am watching the Super Bowl halftime show, and Maroon 5 is up there, and Adam Levine, you know, he struts on stage and, you know, he rips his shirt off, and I'm kind of watching this and I'm like, man, what an idiot. Like, I have to be honest with you. I don't know Adam by like anything. I've never met the guy, but I'm sitting there and I'm judging him by the way he's acting. I'm offended by the way he's acting. I don't like it. These Pharisees were really offended by the way that Jesus acted. And it caused me to ask the question, have you ever allowed offense to block your view of Jesus? Have you ever allowed offense to block your view of Jesus? This happens all the time, whether we realize it or not, I think. Maybe you've been offended at church, the way church is done, and this whole thing of church, you're offended by that. You've been offended by Christians and the things that they've done, the things that they say, and you're offended by them, and it blocks your view of Jesus. You can't see Jesus because of your offense at all this other stuff. But the point is Jesus. The point isn't all those other people and the church and everything like that. And let me tell you, your offense at something that has happened in church or with people is probably right. Your offense is probably valid. But is your offense blocking your view of Jesus? Blocking your view of what he has done for you? Are you allowing your offense to be a distraction? I've heard and seen many, many stories of people who have walked away from Jesus. They've walked away from faith. I'm sure you guys have known people in that boat as well. Maybe you are even in that boat right now where it's just like, I don't want to have anything to do with Christianity because of stuff that you've experienced. And I would propose to you today that if you're in that boat, if you've known someone who's there, that if you are walking away from faith for anything other than being offended at Jesus, then you're walking away for the wrong reason. If you're walking away from faith because of anything other than Jesus, you're walking away for the wrong reason. And when I look at stories, I've rarely, if ever, come across a story where someone's walked away from faith because of Jesus. Rarely, when we truly look at who he is, that's not the reason why we walk away. But if you are walking away from faith because of Jesus, then that is incredibly valid. Because Jesus needs to be the one that causes us to draw us to faith or causes us to walk away. You know, this story is one of the few places that you see in Scripture where it talks about Jesus' anger. And you know where his anger comes from? It comes from the hardness of people's hearts. Jesus was angry not because of all sorts of that, but he was angry because of the hardness of their hearts. My prayer is that my heart would always be soft. God, may a heart be soft towards the things that you want my heart to be soft towards. May a heart always be soft towards people. I want to ask you guys one last question. In doing good, what response are you expecting? It's amazing all the little takeaways that you can grab from a little 6-verse story like this. But I look at the life of Jesus, and in this story, Jesus is just doing good. He's just doing good. Like there's really no reason for Jesus really to be getting into trouble. There's no reason for people to be angry at him, and yet they are. In fact, they're plotting to kill him. What you have is you have religious leaders who are getting together with people who aren't religious at all. They're just supporters of Herod. They're politicians. These two groups of people never, ever usually intersected. They didn't like each other. But they had a common goal. The common goal was to take Jesus out. In their hatred, these two groups of people come together for the one purpose of killing Jesus. Why? For the good things that he did. Jesus always calls us to do good, but he never promises us the results, does he? Jesus always calls us to do good, but he never promises us the results. Sometimes in doing good that Jesus calls us to do, it can be interpreted as evil. We want a certain result when we do good. I know I do. I do good, I get this result. And Jesus shows us time and time and time again that's not necessarily the case. Sometimes you can be doing good. You know, there's a story that the disciples recorded where Jesus, you know, casts a demon out of this person, you know, and they were a person that they ran around naked and they lived in caves and they were out of their mind. And God heals them. And it was all, when it's all said and done, the man is in his right mind. The people of the neighborhood, the people of the village where this happened, they're like, can you get out of here? We don't want you here anymore. Can you leave Jesus? Sometimes the good things that we do can be interpreted as evil. I'm reminded of something this last week. I was asked, you know, for my kids' school projects. The question was, in what way did early Christianity change society? Really, really interesting question. When you look at the early church, especially within the first few hundred years after Jesus' death and resurrection, one of the ways that the early church really changed society was their value of the sanctity of human life. Within Roman culture of the time, life was cheap, and abortion was rampant. But more than abortion, children were born within society, and even after they were born, there was a question, will I allow this baby to live, or will I allow this baby to die? And oftentimes, if they didn't want their children, what they do is they would expose them to the elements of nature. They would take them out into the forest or somewhere else, and they'd leave them there, and they would walk away. And they would say, if the gods want that child to live, then it will live. If the gods don't want it, it will die. And they would walk away. And oftentimes what would be the case is male human life was valued over female human life. And so when women had baby girls born to them, the father would say, okay, we're going to take that baby girl and we're going to expose it to the elements because we don't want a girl, we want a boy. And this was common. And the early church, as it was forming within the first few hundred years, said, no, God has a plan for those little babies. God loves those little babies. You don't want them, but God loves them. And so they would go and they would find these little babies that were abandoned and exposed, and they would take them up and they would take them as their own, and they would adopt them and they would raise those little children. And the church was the only ones doing that. Isn't that amazing? And yet in the midst of that situation happening, more often than not, the Roman government and society looked upon the Christian community and saw them as a scourge on society and tried to wipe them out. It says, we don't want these Christians around, and they persecuted them and they fed them to the lions and sent them into the arena and outlawed their faith in the midst of them doing good. Sometimes when we do good and we get a negative response, our reaction within us, I know there, my immediate reaction within me is to be like, you know what, if I'm doing good and this is the response I'm going to get, forget it. I'm not going to do that anymore. I'm not going to put myself out there anymore. I'm not going to sacrifice anymore. I'm not going to help you anymore. I'm not going to love you in that way anymore if that's the response I'm going to get. That's something that wells up within us. And I think Jesus, in the way of love, says no. Your response isn't based upon how other people respond to you. We're called to the way of love, not these rules that hem us in, but to say, God, what has love called me to do? And despite how people respond to me, even if they don't acknowledge the good that I've done for them, I'm going to continue to love them. I'm going to continue to do good despite those things. I'm going to call the band forward and those who are going to be distributing communion, if you guys can prepare that as well. We're going to take some communion today together. So as we look at this story today from from Mark. I just want to ask us if we could reorient our hearts today. Maybe that first question that I asked you, is it possible that we've become so caught up with the rules that we miss out on God's purpose of restorative love? Maybe that is you today. Maybe you have gotten too caught up with right and wrong, that we miss out on God's purpose of restorative love. Maybe today you're here today and you've shut off your heart because of the response that you have received to the good that you want to do, the good that you have done. And you've kind of thrown up your hands and you've said, if that's the way it's going to be, forget it. God wants to come in and he wants to take our hearts that are hard and soften them once again. But maybe you are here today and there's just been stuff that has distracted you from Jesus. Things that have offended you. Things that just bug you. I don't know what it is. Things maybe that even that you've read in the Bible. Things that you've heard or seen in church. Or maybe it is a Christian neighbor that you've watched their life and you're like, really? Is that what it means to be a Christian? If that's what it means, I'm out. And I would just encourage you, don't give up on Jesus. Don't let those things blind you and distract you from who he is. I remember having a conversation with someone that was very close to me who'd walked away from faith. And there were so many things in their life that had come that they'd experienced that they were so hurt by church that they decided, you know, I don't want to have anything to do with God anymore. And I said to them, but what about Jesus? About Jesus? And when I said that, it stopped them in their tracks. I didn't know what to say about that. Why don't you bow your heads with me? Dear Lord, I pray that our hearts would be soft towards you and towards the things that you care about. If you're here today and you want to invite Jesus into your heart, you invite him into your life. You're tired of this distractions. You're tired of the offense of things that are keeping you away from him. And he's calling you unto himself, saying, I love you. I died for you. Will you accept it? Just pray this prayer with me. Dear Jesus, I don't want to be distracted. I want to see you. I believe in you. Thank you for dying for me. Lord, and you see all the bad things that I've done. Thank you for forgiving me. I choose to follow you.